Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 19th, 2017. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. I'm wearing my soft-colored shirt and my Zumba shorts today. It's hot out. I usually wear Zumbas on Friday, but because of the heat, I'm wearing Zumba shorts. Maybe next week, like just sort of like a kilt type of skirt type of thing. Anyways, on the program today, Cliff Schechter will be joining us. And Judy Gold will be here to give us her perspective on how things are going with the Trump administration. Meanwhile, Comey's extended windup continues. The pitch will have to wait as Trump goes abroad to embarrass America. Meanwhile, at home, the Trump administration actively sabotaging Obamacare. Steve Mnuchin heads to the Hill to pretend to not know what Glass-Steagall was. And the Republican-controlled House may have to re-vote on repeal and replace of Obamacare once they get that CBO score. ICE brags of a near 40% increase in arrests of undocumented immigrants. I would imagine if they calculated how many moms and children they've arrested, maybe a little bit higher. AT&T facing a wireless worker strike this weekend. Julian Assange's rape investigation dropped. And Anthony Weiner is about to plead guilty to transferring obscene material to a minor and is looking at about 2 years in jail. And Joe Lieberman may be back in the most ridiculous way. Steve King may be the Czech Republic ambassador. And Iranians head to the polls today. All that and more on today's program, where we generally look back over the week, and which is just an obscene, ridiculous exercise now to do that. Maybe we should turn down that fan. Turn down that fan a little bit. It is the amount of just, I guess, activity news is just moving at such an incredibly quick pace. At the beginning of this week, there was no special prosecutor, or I should say, I don't know exactly what are they calling Mueller. And we will talk, yesterday. This broke on Wednesday, so I guess yesterday, I presume you talked about the rules and what he's able to do or not able to do and how he's able to be fired or not able to be fired. We'll probably go over that a little bit with Cliff. We also have heard, and that, of course, was triggered by the reports that President Trump, and of course, he refutes this, so we don't know, but the reports that President Trump essentially tried to get Comey to shut down the investigation into Michael Flynn based upon reports of the existence of contemporaneous memos written by Comey. And then, of course, we also had reports of Rod Rosenstein briefing the Senate Intelligence Committee, or Judicial Committee, I believe, or as to the nature of Mueller's mandate. And also that clarifying when it is that President Trump decided to fire Comey. And then, of course, we've actually got other news that have to do with politics on some level. To a certain extent, the Trump saga is sort of just like a bad discovery ID program. But it does have political implications. Next week, Tuesday, is the race in Montana. We are 3 weeks away from the special election in Georgia. We may end up having a special election in Iowa for Steve King's seat. All this is, implicates all of these stories about Trump implicates the politics surrounding this stuff. And yet, I think the healthcare stuff, and we will Cliff and I will get to that as well, which is sort of an amazing story, is also having incredible implications. So it's we're chock-a-block full. But let's do this. We earlier in the week, right? We had President Erdogan. President? I know, but president, really? Yeah. I guess anybody can be these days.
Or actually, only one person can be these days.
Right. So there was a visit by Turkish President Erdogan to this country. You'll recall that maybe it was, I have no sense of time anymore, but it was sometime in the last 3 months that the there was an election in Turkey, which essentially, or a referendum, which essentially gave Erdogan broad dictatorial powers. And we had played earlier in the week video of protesters who were protesting Erdogan's visit from across the street from the Turkish embassy in D.C. Kurds and perhaps some Turkish expats. And then they were essentially bum-rushed by men in suits coming from the Turkish delegation. The police there were, the D.C. police were certainly not prepared for it in any way, and really hard to have expected them, expected them to anticipate this type of thing. Well, now, Voice of America has a different camera angle. This one is from across the street. It's actually behind the car that Erdogan is in. And you see the car is surrounded by security personnel in suits. You see a guy speak into the car, apparently get directions. He speaks into his headset. And then all of a sudden, all the guys start going towards the protest. And then you see in the distance that they're beating him up, and then Erdogan gets out of the car. So let's start this video. There's not a lot of sound, but it is really striking. So we don't know that Erdogan is in the car at this point, but there's a security guard talking to him. In the background, you hear the protesters. He gets the notice. They speak into the thing, that bald guy down at the bottom of the steps, and a couple of those guys go off. And then the camera zooms in over the car, past the car, and you see all of a sudden these suited security guys going on a rampage in the background. And you see a different angle of them beating up people. And the initial security guy, and then Erdogan gets out of the car here it is, the second half of the video. Gets out of the car and basically watches and as the cops start to clear it, Erdogan steps out. There he is. Looks at what's going on over there. I mean, the look on this guy's face. And then there you see security guys come running back from after beating up the protesters. Look at the look on that guy's face. Satisfied. And he stops again to take another look. Check, did you beat the hell out of him? Good. All right. I mean, this is pretty intense stuff. And the fact that Donald Trump has not in any way responded to this. I mean, I guess we did call the Turkish ambassador over to discuss. But this is really grotesque.
I just wanted to comment that upon watching the video a few more times, I realized that the suited bodyguards were not the only people that rushed the police. Everyone in the first video, which you can find on our YouTube channel, so there are the suited bodyguards, and then there are guys in khakis and dark shirts. And so it's a lot more people than if you're just looking at the suited people, because it's total chaos. It's a lot more guys. Two groups of bodyguards, yeah.
Pretty crazy stuff. Folks, meanwhile, I slept well last night, at least for the first couple hours of the evening, because I fell asleep on Saul's bed. His wonderful Casper mattress. I mean, you're aware of it now. I've been talking about this mattress. I feel like he's had it for a year now. Has it been a year? Close. Feels like a year. Feels like a million years. But I know it can't be a million years because he's only 4. But Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Supportive memory foam creates an award-winning sleep surface with just the right amount of sink, just the right amount of bounce. But you don't have to take my word, their word, anyone's word for it. Because unlike when you go down to a horrible mattress store and they look at you like you're some type of cretin for actually lying on the bed, there is something about, like, every major purchase. The bigger the purchase, the less time you're allowed to examine it. I mean, have you noticed that? Like,
is that
cars, houses,
house? Oh, wow.
All of that. I mean, think about the amount of time that people spend, like, I'm going to do all the research I can on this $35 blender. But then when it goes into like getting a mattress, I'm going to walk in there and I'm going to sit on it. All right, yeah. And pay $1,000 or whatever it is. But with Casper, you can try it for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. Shows up in a huge box. It's not even that big, actually. But they roll it tightly. They shrink wrap it in some fashion. And it was very fun to open up the thing. And it pops out, and it's a big mattress. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund it for you for everything, the cost of everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. Free shipping and returns to U.S. and Canada with over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars. It's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. And here's the deal, folks. $50 off any mattress by visiting casper.com/majority. Use the offer code majority. You get $50 off. I think for Saul's mattress, it was like a 10% discount. Terms and conditions apply. That's casper.com/majority. All right, quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter will be joining us. Before we get to Judy Gold. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, I mentioned earlier it's Casual Friday, and I'm wearing short Zumbas because of the weather and the casualness of the day. But there's nothing that goes better with short Zumbas than this tune.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, Cliff Schachter, it is another week in the Trump era. It has gone by. It seems like it was only 6 months since we last talked, which was last Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
This may have actually been the longest in the Trump era, which is really saying something, isn't it? How many different breaking stories did we have about Trump and Russia and various other nefarious things? Flynn and Turkey and... That's right. There was Erdogan's goons beating people up, too. It was a great week.
It was quite a week. And I had totally forgot about this, but you reminded to me as we spoke off air. Roger Ailes also died.
Right. Well, I've been grieving for that. And that's what led me to remember the solemn seriousness with which I grieve his untimely passing.
I mean, I gotta say, I was particularly happy that he didn't die before he had the opportunity to be humiliated publicly and lose his job. Granted, he got a lot of money as he left. Unfortunately, he won't be able to spend it. We will at least get about 45% of that will come back to the taxpayers as hopefully he didn't have the opportunity to figure out how to bury it in the backyard or do whatever he was going to do with that money. Go ahead.
Well, I don't want to, I've got a sort of long thing to say. So why don't you, I don't know what you're going to say. Why don't you go first and I'll tell you my overall thoughts. Cause it goes beyond just, what a terrible person he is, and that I won't fake that I mind one bit that he's left this earth.
That makes me
a terrible person.
Yeah, I have a pretty long-standing rule that when someone passes away, I try to comment only on those people in the way that I believe that for the reasons why I know their name. And so, in the case of Roger Ailes, I mean, I think his public record is quite long and sufficient enough to have dripping disdain for the man. And, you know, I don't know what kind of family man he was, but I do know that he was a lecherous assaulter of women in a serial fashion. So more than I usually do, I think, like, I feel comfortable in commenting on his private life, too, which seems to have been absolutely grotesque. And so I'm sure there are people he was nice to. And for the most part, I would call them either accomplices or just willfully ignorant.
Or sort of partners in crime, like Bill O'Reilly.
Let's play this clip from Shep Smith. Okay, since we were talking about this, what are we going to plan to do? Can you pull that up? We're going to play this clip from Shep Smith, and I have a decent amount of respect for Shep Smith because over the years he's been one of the few voices at Fox who's been willing to buck the talking points, and he has a little bit of ambivalence about Ailes, and I have a theory about that. But here is Shep Smith. I want you to listen to this.
Roger helped everyone in his life, and he never spoke of it. He gave his time and his money and his influence, and he gave his heart. Then last year we began to learn of another side of Roger Ailes, another part of his life. I didn't believe it could be true at first. This man I so admired, despite our differences. It all came to a head as hundreds of us were in Cleveland for the Republican convention. The accusations were mortifying. All cameras were trained on us, all of them. We were the news. Tears flowed daily off camera, so far from headquarters, confused and helpless, unnerved and under attack. Roger would want us to perform, to serve our audience, and we did, somehow. In our private workspace there, by then surrounded by guards keeping prying reporters away from us, a cell phone was being passed around. Roger was on the line. I took it in my hand and said, "Roger? Hey, how you doing?" His voice was firm and reassuring. "I'm okay, Roger. We're all working hard." There was a private exchange then, and he told me, "Keep up the good work. Keep everybody motivated and on point. We'll get through this. I love you." That was the last we spoke. He left the company, and the rest is history unfolding. To the true victims, respect and comfort. It's all so complicated. Everything here was and is as he was. Roger Ailes was a patriot. He was the biggest personality and the most influential and powerful man I ever personally encountered. He changed my life and the lives of everyone in my family forever, for generations to come. He guided me and supported me and protected me, and he told me he loved me like a father. And I love him.
Well, so there's Shep Smith overlooking the parts about the horrible, horrible way that he treated women. Now, I will say this. Apparently, in lieu of flowers, the family has asked just that people touch Roger Ailes' penis, I guess. And that's basically that all the... I mean...
Well, you're not doing justice. I think they also said it was acceptable to send large vats of buttered popcorn.
Indeed. Well, I mean...
I've been holding back, but I gotta let this one fly, Sam.
Please.
So let me know when I'm good to go here.
Go.
Because I think this is important, and I don't want to belittle the way he treated women, which was absolutely disgusting. And that's an important part of this. But there, sadly, very sadly, there are a lot of men in powerful positions who have acted this way. A lot more in the past before laws are in the books, and there are other ones presently. That doesn't make him unique. I wish it did, but it doesn't. Where he is actually unique is like the detrimental impact he's had on American politics. The fact that we have become, the polarized nation we've become, that literally at least 30% of our population have become blithering idiots who believe conspiracy theories and take in paranoia. He's split up families. He's ruined lives. You know, he sat there in the early 70s as a guy that worked on the old Mike Douglas show. He understood the power of entertainment and politics. And maybe he learned a thing or two from watching what Kennedy could do being good on TV. And he took that to serve his own, paranoia, anger, which all the stuff that he sold on Fox is kind of what he knew it so well, because that was him. Mm. That was who he was. This guy from Warren, Ohio, working class community, completely sort of, bristling with anger at so-called elites and the rest. And what he did was, he sat there during Watergate. And this is why this is so important right now. He was a Nixon advisor, and he saw how a functioning media and a functioning Republican Party were able to actually have people like Howard Baker and eventually Barry Goldwater come forward and say, Nixon needed to step down, and what did he know and when did he know it? And the media actually treat evidence as evidence. And that was part of the reason he came to the conclusion that if the right were ever going to win with an ideology not based on evidence, they needed to corrupt that process. And oh my God, has that happened? I mean, the world we live in today, again, I think he's one of the most most influential people of the last, 50 years when it comes to our politics, because he's destroyed our politics. All of this stuff you see now, all the little copycats like Breitbart and talk radio, everything, he, in 1970, as Watergate, was first starting to, head in that direction, is when he came up with the idea of creating a right-wing television station, which you couldn't do at that time. The laws were such that you couldn't own more than one media property in any city. You couldn't, there was a fairness doctrine, and he went about undermining all of that, advising Reagan, advising George H.W. Bush. He was the mind behind Willie Horton, And that's where we are today, because they were able to, so that we've got a chunk of our population that doesn't matter what Donald Trump says or does. He literally could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, and Fox News would say that was a good thing. And so would Breitbart, and so would all these other things. And at least 30% of people would say, well, whoever he shot, as long as it made liberals upset, that means it's good.
Right.
And again, this was his, he pioneered that. You really can't. I mean, it was Rupert Murdoch's money, but without Roger Ailes. And what you were going to say before about Shep Smith is interesting, because Shep Smith was the only one there, only anchor that predated Ailes, or Ailes, or whatever you want to call him. Mm. However you pronounce his silly last name. And so he wanted him out, I think, for a while. Plus, there's always the rumors that about Shep Smith's personal life. I think he wanted him out for that reason too. But because Smith was always, you know, was honest and objective. And you've now seen, interesting is that you've got Trump being impeached. You've got Fox falling apart. Their ratings are finally suffering. They've had many defections from the station. Bill O'Reilly had to be fired. Really the only thing left at Fox at this point, the way you used to think of it, is maybe Sean Hannity, who's still hanging in there somehow. And you know, so it's almost like the right is collapsing on all fronts, and it doesn't mean it's going to be that the left just automatically takes over, or that it's going to be a comfortable collapse, and that we're not going to suffer a lot. So in a way, it's poetic that now he died.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about the collapse, A. And B, I think what you're saying about Ailes is, you know, what he has done in this country. There was somebody had tweeted, a commenter from Deadspin said, you know, I personally saw what he did to my grandparents, who became sort of obsessed with Fox and became so paranoid.
Yep.
That when my grandfather died, it took us hours to find where he hid money and guns in the house because he was convinced that Obama was
That's
coming to
mean.
Take them. And but I will
He's
say
done
this.
That as a, I mean, that, you know, I'll just say in 2 seconds and then I'll let you go. But, you know, we talk about RT now. We talk about all these other stations. And this stuff comes up. I mean, we basically allowed, he created a propaganda network. That's all that it's been, hiding behind 20 years, that has destroyed families like that. I was sitting around a table with a few friends, a lawyer, another guy works in green energy. This is, I remember this a couple months ago, and they all have the same stories about how their parents were once working class Democrats and that they all voted for Trump because of Fox. I mean, Fox got to them. I mean, a young woman, I can't remember her name, made a movie about it, and she made a documentary about what Fox did to her Kennedy-supporting parents. I mean, it literally preyed on people's weaknesses and turned them into right-wing drones. But I meant to say something quickly, and I droned on.
Well, no, I mean, I think, and, you know, I'm a little suspect of most networks in terms of propaganda. But putting that aside, I do want to make the point, however, that Roger Ailes I think he went a little bit further than the garden variety of sexual harassment at the workplace. I mean, this guy, I think, was if these stories, and I have no reason to doubt them, are accurate about his behavior, he was a monster. And
he was. I don't want anything I said before to come off as I'm not saying he's a monster. I you know, in his personal life, but you know, right next to him was Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why we were speculating that maybe Shep, because I think Shep has come out, you know, so maybe he didn't see Shep as a threat, whereas like a Bill O'Reilly, he was always jockeying for the position to be the primary harasser or assaulter of any given woman at Fox. And, you know, you got O'Reilly there fighting to get in first in line. But all right, so Ding Dong, the fat old man is dead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying on a micro level, if you want to call it that, what he did every day, the way he treated women, he was terrible. But, you know, I've seen that in the workplace. You know what I mean? Like, right. Sadly, right? I mean, I've seen people who have been terrible. I've found out things about people who I thought I knew and what they've done. Friends at times. I wish that this were more unusual. And I wish it never happened, but it does. But I, on a macro level, you could find very few people that have corrupted and angered and destroyed our sort of sense of who we are as Americans and having consensus with people of different opinions and the rest as much as Roger Ailes or Ailes. Whatever.
And I think, and look, let me just close by saying, I think we can all agree that for him to die at age 77, it took too long. It just took too long. Mm-hmm. I feel like 77 was just too long. He had too much time on this earth. But be that as it may, we move on. And let's talk about let's move on to one story that, you know, we've had, I think it was at the beginning of this week, we had some pretty poignant healthcare town hall videos of people at MacArthur's in New Jersey town hall. I believe that was at the beginning of the week. And for the life of me, I can't even remember anymore. But I think it was over the weekend. They have been on break, and so some of them have been willing to have town halls. I had some polling from last week that showed that the health care bill that the Republicans passed in the House and has generated an enormous amount of anti-Republican fervor. I think maybe even perhaps even beyond Trump, but it's hard to sort of disaggregate these things. And this story is amazing. Bloomberg came out with a story that the House may have to vote on this bill again and amend it because, and let me just cover the basics of this, Cliff. I know you know this, but it was a reconciliation bill, which means that they only needed 50% plus one because it had to do exclusively with the budget, the implications on the federal budget. And that's a parliamentary, I don't want to say trick, but quirk. And it can then go to the Senate and be subject to the same thing. However, the Senate has different rules than the House. And if you're going to pass something via reconciliation in the Senate, which allows for no filibuster, essentially, you need, because of the Byrd rule, they call it, it needs to be deficit neutral. And because they did not do they rushed this vote before the CBO could score this, basically say how much it costs, they have not sent this bill to the Senate. And let me just read you this quote from Representative Jeff Denham of California. Denham was one of the House Republicans who ended up voting for the measure after earlier in the week opposing it. He was also on the whip team. So they asked him, "Are you aware that this bill has not gone to the Senate yet?" What? "Unaware," said Representative Jeff Denham, with noticeable surprise on Thursday when advised that party leaders still hadn't sent the bill to the Senate. "I am on the whip team and we've had a lot of conversations, but we have not had that one. So I'm going to look into it."
That seems like an unimportant one to have, right? I mean, who needs to talk about that?
Well, I mean, what's happening is they're waiting for the CBO to come back with a score. And because of those late breaking amendments that MacArthur pushed, they had $150 billion cushion on the deficit. But if the CBO concludes that it doesn't at least save $2 billion, it would doom the bill, and they couldn't send it to the House. So they would have to re-vote on a slightly amended version of it in the House, which, of course, would be
awesome.
Yes.
I can think of nothing more poetic for this group of clowns than this. I mean, isn't it just fantastic? I mean, it's exactly because they refused to wait for the CBO score because they knew the CBO score wasn't going to show what they wanted, even though they went after, you know, everybody else for the Democrats and tried to attack them on various measures and the CBO score, even though the Democrats always got that. You know, and again, this is one of those impartial things, unlike right-wing media and things that they have not yet been able to corrupt, global warming science and where they, you know, I'm surprised they haven't found a way to politicize and corrupt it, but apparently they haven't yet. So, they have to actually live within reality. And as we know, they don't really believe in governing. They've all become Fox News now. They just believe in telling paranoia and fear and anger, just telling you what you should be scared of and who you should blame for that. Well, that's not really a great strategy for governing when numbers have to actually add up. So, you know, here we are. And you know the thing's not going to pass the Senate. It's, I mean, a number of senators have come out.
You know, I got to be, the bill as is not going to pass the Senate, but it's quite possible what they could do, and they've talked about this, is that when the congressional bill gets over there, they could basically just scrap it, write their own, and then this thing gets hammered out in conference.
Oh, yeah, that's possible. I'm talking about this bill. This bill, in close to its current form, is not being passed.
Right.
I could see them doing some bad things, cutting, you know, funding for Medicaid by a certain amount, cutting. I mean, there's no doubt I can see them doing some things that are harmful to people. Don't get me wrong. But this thing, when Dean Heller has to try to be reelected in Nevada and Susan Collins, you know, in Maine and places, they're not going to do this thing. It's not going to happen. And the fact that people like Jeff Denham, who was considered a moderate-ish, you know, a member of the House, voted for this, you know, who came out against it and voted for this piece of garbage, like your friend John Faso in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You should go say hi to him, Sam. He's another one who did that, was against it, and then until he was for it. They're waiting now, and we'll find out if it goes to the Senate, they have to vote again. But I can see no better justice than all these guys having to go into, you know, full summer mode, voting on this piece of garbage again, having it be covered by all the press again. And it still is interesting to me, again, that they would choose to do this. You know, I get what their line of thinking was, which is we've been promising people this for like 8 years or 9 years and that we're going to do this. And if we don't do it, we're showing we're going to piss off our voters. But again, where we started off this conversation today, there's a certain percentage of their voters that really will believe anything they tell them, especially if Fox and Breitbart and people like that are saying it. I think they would have done better to leave us alone and found something else to demonize and just jump on taxes.
But that's the problem they have, is that this is as much about cutting taxes as it is anything else.
That's a good point.
I mean, that's the dilemma they have. They could have, I mean, you know, people were speculating, and certainly I was participating in that speculation, that they could just, you know, change it slightly and call it Trump Care and keep the same dynamic. But really, it's quite clear that for them, this is all about those massive tax cuts. And you need to get rid of a huge chunk of Medicaid funding to provide yourself a baseline to get tax cuts. And you can only do it, again, through reconciliation. So they have to cut all of this stuff as a pay for. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to get lasting tax reform, which Paul Ryan wants.
Sure, they're kind of boxed in because they have to pay for all the increases in defense too.
Yeah.
So that's really the problem. Is they could choose between tax cuts and defense, they'd be okay. But because they need both of them to keep their contractors and donors and which are the same happy, you're right. The only other big pile of money out. I mean, they can. You know, go out there and do racist talking points on welfare until the cows come home. But it doesn't really matter because there's no money there.
Right.
It's only Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which is why, of course, in recent years they've made reforming. I put that in quotes. Medicare and Social Security part of their deal too. That's the only way you get the tax cuts. So you're right. I mean, I guess that's what this is in the end. Is they couldn't find another stream to do this, but it is interesting because this was a no-win situation and they made these guys take this vote and a bunch of these guys were stupid enough to actually vote for this thing and they're going to get crushed in their districts likely because of it. Again, I can't say definitively what will happen. I can only talk about if the dynamic is the same as it is, you know, on election day as it is right now. Obviously, we have a president who has no morality whatsoever and will probably try to find a couple places to bomb to change the storyline and God knows what else, you know, the Republicans will try to do. But if they're stuck in the same position they're in right now, I mean, it was just a couple of days ago where they were Quinnipiac to the generic ballot. They were down 16 points.
Yeah.
Do you realize what kind of a wipeout that would be if on election day they were down 16 points in the generic ballot? What I mean, they'd lose 80, 100. I don't know, something like that.
There is. I'm looking at. I'm looking for, and I can't find it. But this Pew polling from last week, and the similar findings in terms of the generic ballot. Big finding, difference in enthusiasm, right? Which is really key and pretty dramatic for an off-year election, where you have Democrats, even with a Republican in office. Now that's skewed a little bit during the Bush years because of 9/11 and et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is that Democrats are far more energized to vote. And here is the dilemma that the Republicans have. They are in districts. They have attempted to put themselves into districts that are, 55 to 45 Republican. Right. We've talked about this on this program before, the redistricting of 2010. And so you have Republicans in these districts who are still very supportive of Trump. I tried to find some numbers on this, and it hasn't been anything as far as I can tell as of late. Maybe John from San Antonio calls in a little bit later into the program. But I think we're still looking at anywhere from like mid-70s to mid-80s support for Donald Trump in these districts. And the problem is that a lot of these people are just aren't going to come out and vote because they're just not motivated. They're sort of depressed. Right. And so there is these Republicans are really hoisted by their own petard. Now, again, it's impossible to predict at this point, but it appears.
Well, I only saw 6% of the worst I've seen so far. There was one poll that had Trump at 63% Republican support, which was surprising to me. But I did not see that district by district.
Exactly.
So that is the question.
And remember, too, that he may be at 63% favorability with all Republicans. That seems a little bit low to me. But even if that's the case,
me too. Yeah,
I would bet that if you were to look at the Republican congressional districts, that number would be higher.
Yeah.
And because, Republicans in general may not be the same as people who, send Mo Brooks to the House or something like that.
Right. Well, we also have to remember that due to recent reports and other things that we know, at least it seems pretty credible to me, let's put it that way, that they suppressed 200,000 votes in Wisconsin. This also matters, and I can speak about that in a state that's a swing state but controlled by the red team, that it matters where these districts are and what state, because the states control electoral machinery. Their big problem is, and you brought up Jeff Denham, and that's a great example, is they control next to nothing, if not nothing, in California. And there are literally seven Republicans in California who could lose. In New York, where you're sitting, there's four or five who could lose. I mean, those two states alone, half of their overall margin almost could be lost. So they're a lot safer than they should be in places like Wisconsin and Arizona and Georgia, but not so much in certain other places. And I guess we'll have to see where the numbers are as we get closer next year.
The vote suppression in Michigan and in Wisconsin in particular, because those were, we're talking about 10,000 vote swing and, more or less in both those states. The vote suppression, I think, clearly impacted the outcome there. I mean, I think that's, I feel like it's gotten a lot less attention than it should have in the African-American communities. In Pennsylvania, I think there's an argument too, maybe less so, because it's a bigger spread. But nevertheless, I mean, I think it was very hard to measure because I think the Obama coalition had numbers of African American participation that was that I think it was going to be hard for any candidate to match. The question is how much of that drop off is a function of voter suppression tactics? And it's very easy.
Pennsylvania probably less because they've had a Democratic governor.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it doesn't mean voter suppression doesn't happen, but it's a lot easier when you control everything, like in Wisconsin.
Indeed. And you can look at the specific statutes in the voter ID that was passed there. There was and so yeah, I, it, you I've seen numbers that say 200,000 in Wisconsin, but all we're talking about is, you know, 12,000 would have made a difference. And so I think that's a fairly safe assumption, but you're right about that.
I'm just saying for the last election, as well as the one coming up, the midterm, when we're talking about where the numbers are being important, you know, Pennsylvania is another state that has a number of swing districts in it where the Republicans who aren't, you know, as safe. There's four, I think at least four, who could lose there. Mm. And it does make me feel a little bit better. That's just a Democrat, because it will be harder, and that Democrat governor will be up for re-election, and it'll be harder for them to do it in this case than it will be in some of these other states where they've got complete control. I mean, does anybody think free and fair elections are going to happen in Texas? So it doesn't really matter to me, even if there's two seats or three seats that are Republican and vulnerable in Texas. I wish that I could count on those as much. I'm not, because I don't trust there'll be free and fair elections there. I think there will be somewhat free and fair elections. I think they will find a way, you know, because they can get away with it, to do some voter suppression there, and too many other states too.
All right, we just got a couple of minutes because I got to get to Judy Gold, but I have to ask you about this. Joe Lieberman floated as FBI head of FBI because of his great experience as a crime fighter and his wonderful executive experience that he has not had in either one of those two situations. He, to be fair, he does work at a law firm that represents Donald Trump. So he has some legal background, but it was I think he's probably more of just the rainmaker and the lobbyist type. I will let you just have a comment. I mean, I hope there's no one listening to this program who has any doubt as to the depth of my disdain for Joe Lieberman. But let's just remind people of yours.
You're just so unfair, Sam. I mean, he was an attorney general in Connecticut back in 1942 or so.
Well, no, I know exactly when it was. It was actually during
the 70s.
It was during the 80s. I recall this because Joe Lieberman managed to put himself on a commercial, basically taking credit for the tolls going away. I went to school in Connecticut at that time, and somehow he was such a whore about it. That I remember being in college, knowing not much, a little bit about Connecticut state politics, going like, how the frick does he justify putting himself in front of those tolls that have been taken away?
Why don't you give him the credit he deserves? He did, after all, stop people 55 and older from having health care, guaranteed health care. And I mean, you know, he's showing he cares about people. Look, all seriousness, of course, he's a complete jackass, and the whole sort of man of integrity thing that they're still trying to trot out there really translates to he was willing to screw his own party to make himself seem like the best David Broderite in Washington so that he could get on TV, kind of like McCain on the other side. So, the attorney general thing he did actually do, so if you want to say he has a little bit of experience in crime fighting, but a political figure for FBI, really, this guy. And I find it hysterical that John Cornyn came out originally immediately like, oh, he'll get 100 votes. Mm. I'm sure what John Cornyn apparently has been watching Fox. There's so many Democrats that can't stand Joe Lieberman for all the reasons, you know, the fact that he torpedoed healthcare going to more people, to him, his never admitting his mistakes in Iraq and wanting to take us under wonderful journeys to fight wars in other foreign lands. And even more recently, he undermined President Obama's Iran deal, opposed it, and introduced the wonderful Betsy DeVos to the Senate as somebody who we should all want.
How many votes do you think he would get from Democrats? I feel like he wouldn't get more than 10.
I could see him getting 15 or 20. I'm trying to think of all of the sort of self-proclaimed moderates from certain, you know, reddish purple states, maybe 15 or 20, but you're right. I think it probably is limited to that. I mean, Sherrod Brown, senator from Ohio here, was literally willing in an article to come out openly and attack him. So they're not even playing by the rules of the gentleman from blah, 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 blah anymore. He was just like, he's the reason we don't have, you know, universal health care for those 55 and above. And he's the reason. I mean, so the fact that they're willing to speak so openly about it can tell you how a lot of these guys feel about Lieberman and his whole shtick about being the most honest man in the universe. I think he'd be hard pressed to get more than that number of votes. Although if they didn't filibuster, that would, can they filibuster on that? I don't think they can. So that might be enough.
It might be. Cliff Schechter?
Yeah, he might get enough. Yeah.
Well, hopefully he won't get appointed.
Yes, sir.
All right, bud. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you later.
Take it easy, my friend.
Bye-bye. All right, folks, going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will have the wonderful Judy Gold.
Can I sit next to you? Can you sit next to me? Get the stars out your eyes. Come and bring them to me. I've been gone so long. I've been working on a plan, yeah. It's just that I've been down so long. I gotta give me my work. Can I sit next to you? Can you sit next to me? I walk up to Memphis alone, 'cause you do it for me. I know you would. All the kicks from the sticks, all the kicks are in the room. I put all that aside, concentrate on you. All the kicks from the sticks, all the hits that we took, all the stitches we got, all our brains so good.
Ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump is heading overseas, and so I thought it would be safe to bring Judy Gold onto the program via phone now that Trump has left the building. Judy, how are you?
Okay.
You had a late night last night. You had a tough night.
Yeah, I drove 5 hours to come to Arlington, Virginia, which is, of course, right by Fuckface's temporary home. And I get to the hotel, and the guy at the front desk is, like, looking at me weird. He's like, I know you from television. I said, okay. And he said, but I have bad news for you. We oversold. I'm like, what the fuck? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, what am I supposed to do? And I had to do TV at 8 o'clock in the morning. So,
what did you do? Like a local Virginia station or something?
It was Good Morning Washington. after I called the club, they were doing a lot of phone calls, not in front of me because they knew I would freak out. Right. I was nice. I felt bad for the guy that had to deliver the message. Anyway, so now I had to go to another hotel. Now I'm back at the original. I got, like, free everything. I got a suite and, 50,000 points on my FPG thing, whatever the hell it is. And
50,000 points on the here. FPG? What? Now, Judy.
You know, like your hotel thing.
I know.
Look, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because we are in danger. Do you understand? This guy is fucking mentally ill. He's dangerous. He's calling Mike Flynn and being like, oh, stay strong. Stay strong. Shut the fuck up. How is he going to sit through these NATO meetings? He has no attention span. I have bigger attention span than him. I have a bigger penis than him.
Wasn't that really what the whole thing with Lavrov was about when he was giving away this information? Was just basically
so about his inverted penis and his tiny little fucking hand. That's what everything's about. And how mean was he to Andrea Mitchell? Oh, did he get fired? Oh, shut the fuck up. Get the fuck off of our fucking land. And the other, what about how the ambassador of Turkey? Fuck you.
Right. We played that clip.
What is going on? Yeah, I know.
It's pretty insane. Let me read this to you, all right? I thought you might enjoy this. It is. It came out in the Times today. Tips for leaders meeting with Trump. This is not like this is not Andy Borowitz.
No, this
piece.
Is like the rules for yeah. Trump. Okay.
After 4 months, this is the key paragraph. After 4 months of interactions between Mr. Trump and his counterparts, foreign officials and their Washington consultants say certain rules have emerged. One, keep it short, no 30-minute monologue for a 30-second attention span. Do not assume he knows the history of the country or its major points of contention. Compliment him on his Electoral College victory.
No fucking way!
Contrast him favorably with President Obama. Do
Are
not...
Fucking, no, you're...
I'm not kidding. Do not get hung up on whatever was said during the campaign. Stay in regular touch. Do not go in with a shopping list, but bring some sort of deal he can call a victory. That is basically the... And then this, apparently Saudi Arabia is going to reportedly accommodate Trump by serving halal steak with ketchup to him.
He is such fucking trash. I mean, he's going overseas and he's having fucking steak and ketchup. What the fuck is the matter with him? Did you see yesterday when he was with the president of Colombia?
Yeah.
He's using his finger. He's using his finger to point to the words.
Wait.
A fucking piece of paper.
He was what?
He was also calling coca cocoa, like as if.
Yeah. No, he
cocaine
uses his pointer finger.
Chocolate.
Pablo yeah. Escobar was very big in the cocoa business, and it was terrible, and it was totally unfair.
Pablo Escobar Hershey.
He uses his... You know what that list is? That is a list, like, when you have a, you know, mentally challenged child, and the babysitter comes.
Right.
And it's like, here's the rules, here's the phone number, call us, you know... Call us if he starts, you know, running all over the fucking apartment and hanging off the balcony. That's the president of the United States. That's the president. What the fuck? Like, this guy, how did this happen? And it continues. A blowjob. He gets impeached for a fucking blowjob. And this guy, look, and what did he did to Israel? I hate him. Jared Kushner is an asshole. Did you see how he was yesterday at that Columbia thing?
No. What did Kushner do?
He's sitting on the end, like just smiling, like, hey, oh, hey everyone, hey, I'm Jared. Woo. You know, like Mr. Fucking, hey, wait, what's up? Yeah, okay, yeah.
He's getting a lot of credit for convincing Boeing to drop the price of weapons sales to Saudi Arabia. Because he's bringing about Mideast peace, I guess is the calculation there, and all I can think of is kickback. Like, where is the kickback here?
Oh,
is it coming from?
I know. Well, he better call his father and give him pointers about what it's like to be in jail. Okay, how's that?
Indeed. And should we play this clip? You want to play this clip?
I have the kosher food? I need the kosher food. You're in jail.
Apparently.
I know, but I don't eat cheeseburgers. I don't eat cheeseburgers, and I refuse. I'm going on a hunger strike. I need challah. I need challah and herring, and I need borscht. I need... Go ahead.
Apparently, the rabbi gave Jared and Ivanka a pass for flying on Shabbat, is my understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never gotten a pass. Tell him to talk to my dead mother. She would never have given him a fucking pass.
All right. Do you think you can handle?
And who's the fucking who? Yes, but who's the rabbi that's like, okay, yeah, you can break all the rules. Here, have some shrimp. Fuck you. Good.
Well, since you are actually heading overseas to jeopardize our standing in the world, I think why not?
Moshe said you can have shrimp if you humiliate the nation afterwards.
Listen, I want you to, will you be able to listen to this? We have this clip of Trump.
I'm not him. I can focus.
Okay.
So.
This is, well, I'm just, I don't want, this is like, a, it's like a, we can stop it at any time during the course of the clip, but it is Trump. He first gets a question from a reporter about, you know, the Comey revelations this week, or the, you know, allegedly a contemporaneous and memo outlining when Trump tried to get him to stop the Flynn thing. He shuts it down, and then he goes on a rambling answer afterwards, which is pretty vintage Trump. And also
about his witch hunt?
About the witch hunt. And I got to say, as he talks about Rod Rosenstein and basically tells a huge lie, Rosenstein is in a hearing with the Senate Intelligence Committee telling them the complete opposite. But here is that exchange yesterday. Feel free to stop it at any time, Judy, if you can't handle it.
Okay.
Oh, I should also tell you, we've sped it up at 1.5 speed so that we don't really punish people too much.
Okay.
In the light of a very busy news week, a lot of people would like to get to the bottom of a couple of things, give you a chance to go on record here. Did you at any time urge former FBI Director James Comey in any way, shape, or form to close or to back down the investigation into Michael Flynn? And also, as you look back...
No. Next question.
Next question.
Better speed it up.
As you look back over the past 6 months or year, have you had any recollection where you've wondered if anything you have done has been something that might be worthy of criminal charges in these investigations or impeachment, as some on the left are implying?
I think it's totally ridiculous. Everybody thinks so. And again, we have to get back working our country properly so that we can take care of the problems that we have. We have plenty of problems. We've done a fantastic job.
The fucking
problem.
Have
a tremendous group of people, millions and millions of people out there that are looking at what you had just said and said, what are they doing? Director Comey was very unpopular with most people. I actually thought when I made that decision, and I also got a very, very strong recommendation, as you know, from the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. But when I made that decision, I actually thought that it would be a bipartisan decision. Because you look at all of the people on the Democratic side.
One second. He thought his unilateral decision would be a bipartisan decision. Does not quite fully get what bipartisan means in this instance, but...
Yeah. Well, he doesn't get what first of all, what is he fucking talking about when all he does is write tweets and make speeches about the fucking Democrats and how the fucking we got to get rid of the fuck you. That's what's divided the nation. You're fucking dividing the nation. You fuck. Everyone thinks that. No one thinks it. No one. So.
let's let it play.
When I made that decision, I actually thought that it would be a bipartisan decision, because you look at all of the people on the Democratic side, not only the Republican side, that was saying such terrible things about Director Comey. Then he had the very poor performance on Wednesday. That was a poor, poor performance. So poor, in fact, that I believe, and you'd have to ask him, because I don't like to speak for other people, but I believe that's why the Deputy Attorney General went out and wrote his very, very strong letter. And then on top of that, after the Wednesday performance by Director Comey, you had a person come and have to readjust the record, which many people have never seen before, because there were
mistakes made. Bullshit.
And I thought that was something that was terrible. We need a great director of the FBI. I cherish the FBI. It's special. All over the world, no matter where you go, the FBI is special. The FBI has not had that special reputation with what happened in the campaign, what happened with respect to the Clinton campaign, and even, you could say, directly or indirectly, with respect to the much more successful Trump campaign. We're going to have a director who's going to be outstanding. I'll be announcing that director very soon, and I look forward to doing it. I think the people in the FBI will be very, 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 very thrilled. And just in concluding, we look forward to getting this whole situation behind us so that when we go for the jobs, we go for the strong military, when we go for all of the things that we've been pushing so hard and so successfully, including health care, because Obamacare is collapsing.
That's a big success.
There's nothing to compare anything to, because we don't have health care in this country. You just look at what's happening. Aetna just pulled out. Other insurance companies are pulling out. We don't have health care. Obamacare is a fallacy. It's gone. We need health care. We need to cut taxes. We're going to cut taxes. If I get what I want, it'll be the biggest tax cut in the history of our nation. And that's what I want. It's going to bring back companies. It's going to bring back jobs. We lost so many jobs and so many companies to countries that are not so far from you, Mr. President.
I like that part where he basically just says,
many other places.
I like where he just says, like, hey, you guys, people, your friends, like you, you have our jobs now. You guys have jobs. And you.
Yeah, Like, he, like, who worked at Mar-a-Lago?
Unbelievable. How much time we got left on it? All right, we got a minute
serious?
Left. Let's see. Yeah,
this
yeah.
Kill,
all right,
Jesus
go.
Christ.
What I want, it'll be the biggest tax cut in the history of our nation. And that's what I want. It's going to bring back companies. It's going to bring back jobs. We lost so many jobs and so many companies to countries that are not so far from you, Mr. President. They're very close to you, actually, and to many other places throughout the world. We're going to change that.
Oh, my God.
We're going to have expansion. We already do. You look at what's happening with Ford and with General Motors in Michigan and Ohio. You look at the tremendous number of jobs that are being announced
tremendous,
in so many different fields.
Tremendous.
And that's what I'm proud of. And that's what we want to focus our energy on. The other is something I can only tell you. There was no collusion. And everybody, even my enemies, have said there is no collusion. So
no,
we want to get
you're
back and
liar.
Keep on the track that we're on, because the track
no
that we're on
that
is record setting. And that's what we want to do, is we want to break very positive records. Thank you. You could ask a question.
Yeah, you can ask a question now.
I want to break
pass.
Very
pass.
Sam, you always say that before the show, actually, in
what's
prep.
It?
I want to break very positive records today.
Positive records. Going to break some positive records.
I hate him so much. I cannot believe that he gets away with this shit. And then you, like, Mitch McConnell. I mean, what the fuck? Like, who would, like, Paul Ryan. How much? If you had one punch, would it be Eric, Don Jr., or Mitch McConnell? Go.
I mean, I would like to punch Ryan.
Yeah, Paul Ryan.
Oh, Paul Ryan, yeah.
But, I mean, that guy's got guns.
But out of the choices,
he's got
McConnell.
Guns. Yeah.
Who cares about those other stupid Beavis Mudhead guy?
I would be afraid of, like, what would happen to my hand if I punched McConnell. Like, I feel like it would just be subsumed.
Yeah.
Some type of, like,
it would.
This isn't my first time around the rodeo. I think I haven't been punched in the face
he
before.
He looks like he's been punched in the face.
Someone's hand can jeel
like
in my
board.
Skin.
Can you please put on the surgical glove before you do that?
Very attractive.
Oh. Well,
Judy, yeah. I guess my only question, Judy, is do you think he's grown during his time in office?
Yeah, I think his fucking stomach has grown. And I think that he is so dumb. He is such an idiot. Oh, there's my room service. That's for free.
Everyone's saying so.
Everybody loves you.
He's so unqualified. He's so, like, I'm more qualified.
Wait,
hi, how are you?
What'd you get?
I got soup and a salad.
You got a free lunch and all you get is a soup and a salad?
Oh, you can put it right there. Yeah, or there. Yeah, I know. I'll get more. I'm going to get more food at the, you know, I'm going to go take a nap and then I'm going to wake up. I'm going to get some coffee and yeah, you know what I just ordered?
What?
Steak and ketchup.
Halal steak? Judy,
halal,
let me ask you this.
Steak.
Let me ask you this, honestly. Like, I was thinking about this today. Like, do you think, what do you think is going to, do you think Trump's going to resign, impeach, fill out his at least his first 4-year term, or do you think he's going to have a heart attack?
Oh, he's got to have a heart attack. I mean, look how miserable he looks.
Or at least pretend that he has had a heart attack so that he can get out.
I don't know how you fake a heart
right.
attack.
You just say that he
you
had a
no
heart
breath?
Attack because
have you
he
seen
wants
his doctor?
He doesn't want to be.
I could see him
you
on
just
stage.
Say that you had a heart attack.
Yeah. You're bringing
I
his
see him like, and by the way, I think we're doing it.
It was the biggest heart attack most
was,
people would die. An elephant would
have
died.
I had a massive.
I'm having
massive,
a massive heart attack right now.
I had a tremendous.
And I'm still talking.
Wheezy, here I come.
Tremendous. I had one of the biggest heart attacks. The doctor said they had never seen a heart attack like this before. They said my heart was
huge.
Not there.
It's like a super heart attack.
Really big, really great. But
really, really, really.
What? So, Judy, all right, catch us up on what you've been doing.
Okay, so, well, right now I'm at the Arlington Draft House this weekend. That's the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia. I'm on...
Are you doing anything? Are you doing a theater?
What?
Or what are you doing? Are you doing a TV show?
It's called... No, I'm doing stand-up comedy, the stand-up comedy that I'm so well-known for. So anyway, I'm doing stand up at the Arlington Draft House this weekend. I'm on, you know, the show Nightcap with Ellie Wentworth. It's really funny. It's on Pop TV. It's on the same network as Schitt's Creek.
I none of the things you just said.
Oh, Schitt's Creek.
But
that's
Allie
good one.
Wentworth, I think, is friends with Isabel Gillies. I think she's mentioned Allie Wentworth.
That's great.
Oh wait, so is she? Is that who? Wait, no, I'm thinking of a different person. Never mind.
What?
Another comedian. Another comedian.
Oh, wait a second.
Okay. Anyway, she has a show called Nightcap on Pop TV, and I play the director. It's a really good show.
Oh wait, it's a
show.
Oh.
And I'm on that new Showtime series, I'm Dying Up Here, about stand up in the 70s, the Jim Carrey thing.
Holy cow.
That's on June 4th.
So much TV now.
All right. But you know how it is, Sam.
I know.
Ebb and flow. Ebb and flow.
Some days are good, some days are not.
Right. You cannot get all caught up in the Michigan.
You can't go the day by day.
Right. So I'm grateful. Fuck grateful. If another person writes grateful, I'm gonna fucking fuck. I hate grateful. I don't wanna know the 10 fucking albums you have. I don't fucking care, okay?
What's going on with that? What's getting what's going on? Well, you don't like the people listing the albums that they have.
It's just like, I don't care. Like, do something. Go call your fucking congressman. Fucking give us a shit about your album. The world is it's falling apart. We have a mentally ill, subpar, intelligent man. I mean, and now the Pence thing.
Right. I mean, are you going to like it better if Mike Pence becomes?
No, forget ever like getting an abortion. Forget it.
I think that's going to be a problem anyways, frankly. I mean,
and he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. Good luck with Mike. He calls his wife mother. Now, all of a sudden, the fact maybe I want to fuck my daughter, maybe not so bad. Good luck.
But you know what? They're fighting now, so that's good.
You know, Lawrence O'Donnell, I think, did a, I just saw a clip of this. I think it was from maybe last night or two nights ago. I can't remember when it was. But saying apparently Mike Pence has launched some type of PAC. I'm quite convinced that Lawrence O'Donnell made it sound like he was already starting his campaign just with the hopes that Trump would find out about it.
Yes, I actually totally agree. I heard that too. Is Lawrence going to stay on MSNBC?
I only know what I've been reading, but it doesn't sound like it. I mean, I heard some report that they were talking, but I only know what I'm reading, and I know that. I mean, it's fairly obvious where the MSNBC wants to head. You know, you just look at who they've hired for contributors and
Greta.
Well, yeah, I mean, host, I mean, Greta, and, right. You know, they hired George Will recently.
And David Frum.
David Frum, and what's her...
electrifying TV presences.
And
oh, my God.
The former, I can't remember her name now, but she was a former McCain, Weaver, or what? I can't remember her name.
What about the one? What about Rubin, the one from the Washington Post?
Jennifer Rubin is on all the time. Yeah,
yeah.
No, it's unbelievable to a certain extent. Like what?
Roger Ailes is rolling over in his living room floor.
Were you upset to hear of his passing?
Oh my God! I immediately went to synagogue and said mourner's Scottish. I couldn't believe it. How about all these people saying what a great guy he is?
Unbelievable.
Maddow.
Rachel Maddow says he's a great
considered
guy?
Him a friend.
This is Rachel Maddow.
No way.
Roger Ailes, totally great guy.
She was on Access Hollywood. The quote is, I considered him a friend.
Considered him a friend.
No.
Wait, who said that?
Way.
Rachel Maddow.
Oh, my God.
1978, a young Roger Ailes is sexually harassing a young woman.
Wait, he said that?
No, but
no,
I mean,
I'm kidding.
I don't understand how people can do that. I mean, I I just don't understand, like, you know, how you can lend credibility to a guy like that, even if like you were, I don't know, on friendly terms with somebody. But I mean, how good of friends could they have been, honestly?
Right.
It's not only the sexual harassment and the predatory behavior and probably, you know, just sexual assault on different occasions, but he also put, no one is mentioning, he put that woman in a mental institution and got her drugged up and then put her in the institution and then she got out. Like, whether or not she has problems or whatever, he ran her life for over 20 years and that's what he did to keep her quiet. That is insanely criminal and evil. I mean,
right.
When I heard that he died and I called my mom to be like, Roger Ailes is dead. She was like, you shouldn't be wishing anyone dead. And I'm like, I don't wish anyone dead. I'm just glad. I don't care.
I was glad I was hosting and I danced the Hotline Bling. That's our Dance on Graves music.
Yeah, exactly.
The Majority Report.
That's what I said. I was like, it's like Scalia. I didn't actively wish that someone would die, but when they did, I'm happy. And then I gave her a few examples like, would you be happy if
ironically,
Trump
it was
died?
Like
and
Scalia
she was like, well,
me.
I guess, yeah.
And that I hoped both of them would die.
I have to say that I found Scalia's death to be... Well, it's not just a question of happy. It's that, like, that actually, you know, Ailes was already out. He was there. I'm glad that he didn't die. I'm glad that he got booted before he died, although I would have traded that for, like, you know, a heart attack at 55 and hit by the bus.
Right.
But with Scalia's death actually had a functional benefit to... I mean, maybe millions of people. Like, you know, he couldn't rule on Friedrich. You just saw this voting law in North Carolina. You could probably trace it back to the fact that Scalia was dead when that law could have come up before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a lot of real, tangible benefits to this country with Scalia dying. That with Ailes, it's really just more like, oh, okay. I mean, good. You don't want this guy to live like a happy old life.
Right. Go ahead.
I mean, that's it. So I think I was happier about
that. But what about Neil? Scalia. Like, how the fuck did this president get Neil Gorsuch approved?
Well, once he got elected, that was a fait accompli.
Right.
I mean, once he got elected,
and what about
that was fait accompli.
Mitch McCutley going, well, I can't believe the Democrats are holding this. Fuck you! What are you fucking? I mean, they're such hypocrites.
Yes, but you can't blame. I mean, the hypocrite stuff is just not as bad. I think it's just like the horrible stuff they just do. Period.
Right.
So, are you getting annoyed with people that you come in contact with, particularly in show business, who are not sort of paying attention politically?
This is what I can't stand. You know, I had to stop. I just had to stop. I couldn't do it anymore. you know, I've been there. I've done the march. I've done that. I mean, nothing's going to change. It just, and then there's the other ones that are like, you know, I keep telling myself, I'm going to call. I'm going to do it. I'm so busy. But is it going to really make a difference?
What did you think about Jimmy Fallon's? They did a piece on him the other day in the Times that he's sort of still reeling from the time where he rubbed Donald Trump's hair.
Right, he humanized him and made him. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, sorry. Sometimes when you have a microphone, you have a responsibility, and it was not to make him like likable. Okay. I mean, the shit that comes out of this guy's mouth. I mean, he's so mean and partisan and the fucking tweeting at two. I mean, he's an infant.
It really is crazy. It really is crazy.
He's crazy.
Oh. He is
crazy. And it's the pace of it all. How are your kids taking this? Are both your kids now in college?
No, one's 15, one's 20. The 20-year-old just thinks he's great, and the 15-year-old...
Wait, the 20-year-old thinks that Trump is great?
No, he thinks he's great. He doesn't care.
Okay.
Yeah. But the 15-year-old watches, you know, he's, like, very engaged and, like, but, you know, whenever he hears World War III, he's like, what's going on? What's going on? And I'm like, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine.
I hope he's
oh, good. The other one's dentist just called because he didn't go to his appointment. Great. Okay. I fucking kill myself.
Isn't that the name of your show?
Kill me now.
I hope people are listening to your podcast. It's, you know, my sister has basically said it's her favorite podcast. And I'm like, excuse me?
I love your sister.
My sister is a huge fan of yours.
I love her. She is the best. I want you to be on MSNBC more.
You know, it's an interesting time because I think like they're finding so much ratings benefit, and there's, you know, people are just interested in the sort of, I don't know, the true crime aspect of this stuff. You know, I usually am on once a week. I missed a week or so because I was in Vegas and
right.
And I was on, you know, Friday. I may go on tonight, but it's not as there's just not as much like a political discussion. It seems to me,
right?
On it's yeah,
more you're
like,
right.
What is the what's the latest? You know, and there's just so much news that is going on. It's insane.
Well, I love Malcolm Nance. He's my new boyfriend.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I've interviewed Malcolm Nance on this program, and I've talked to him like at
and
the Green Room.
And he's a big comedy fan.
Is he a big comedy fan?
Yes.
I just don't know what to make of him. I mean, he has said to me that, you know, he's a spy. He's not a journalist. And
right.
I am always leery of people who sort of like qualify like, OK, great. I'm, you know, sort of a comedian or a host and not necessarily
right.
a journalist either. But like I only say that when someone presses me and when someone says when, you know, whether it's like some guy coming on this program to debate with me about the Supreme Court and doesn't know anything about
right.
it and then says, well, I'm just a comedian. Well, okay, why are you making an excuse for yourself already? Like, what is it that
right.
you're...
Right, well, that's...
What
yeah.
is it that you're excusing? Like, what, like,
right.
you're excusing your lack of knowledge, or are you excusing your standards as to what you can say that, as to whether or not it's
right.
actually true? I mean, what
right.
is, why does someone say to me, I'm a spy, not a journalist? Okay. So what does that mean?
Well, he wrote a book.
I know. Well, that was the context he was saying to me. Like he says to me,
right.
I said, well, he had made a claim on this show about Anwar mm-hmm. al-Awlaki's son. We've talked about it on the program. I don't want to go, but I said,
right.
do you have any link or source? Because no one's ever reported what you said. No one's ever made that defense by the administration. No one's ever said anything about it. He goes, well, look, I don't. And I'm like, well, how can you articulate? I mean, how can you defend that? And he goes, well, I don't have to. I'm a spy. I'm not a journalist. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, but you should have me on for my book. And I'm like, well, you just told me, like, I can't necessarily trust what you say. That it's not
right.
necessarily reinforced by sources. And so, I don't know. I'm a little bit dubious. I think he's a good guy. And, you know, I appreciated, like, at that moment where, what's his face? Williams? Brian
yeah.
Williams said, you know, look how beautiful those missiles are. He said, well, they're not so beautiful, the people they land on.
I know. That
and,
was good.
And
that's,
I appreciated
yeah,
that.
Can we fucking talk about Brian Williams?
Sure.
What the fuck? First of all, this voice and laugh, and we're going to talk, and we'll be right back. And I'm a liar, but I got my job back, and I talk like this.
You don't like his cadence. I sort of think he's like a good broadcaster in a way, but he's a little bit, he's got a shtick.
Yeah, he's definitely got a shtick, and I can't believe... You know, I feel like sometimes on MSNBC, it's like they bring in Brian Williams as if, you know, oh, dad's here, something happened, you know?
Right. That is his job there, I think. I mean, in addition, he does like an 11 o'clock show.
That is the job that they brought him in for, special events or something like that. I mean, I think they, I'd be surprised if he doesn't have another show, like an earlier show going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if he replaces Lawrence O'Donnell. I mean, I don't know. I know.
Oh, you think that's what they, that's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea. The only thing I know about that place is like the mints are in the makeup room, and that's about it.
Right.
I don't even know where the commissary is. I don't even get like a.
I love Joy Reid.
I mean, I think she's very nice, and she's smiling.
I don't know, Judy.
You're such a Jew. I love Joy Reid.
Well, I don't know.
I think that that she had a tendency. I think there's a tendency there that she has to. I don't know. When I watch her on TV, I think she's very smart. But there's stuff like sometimes that she tweets or stories that she. And I've never watched her show on the weekends, to be fair. So,
God, she's so brilliant.
I think she's very smart. Her politics, I think, are a little bit to the center of mine.
Okay. Yeah. You know what?
You mad?
You're a miserable, jealous.
I'm not jealous. I'm honestly not jealous.
Yeah, but you know that every time you're on, my girlfriend's like so excited.
Oh yeah, no,
and you're
good.
I have a question.
Yeah,
does Chris Hayes shave?
Does he shave? You mean like?
Yeah, it looks like he has no facial hair.
I can ask him next time I see him. I'll ask him.
No,
I don't...
just look at his face. Look at his face and tell me if there's any.
If there's any stubble,
like hair growth. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but some people
Everybody's got makeup, and I think he's
like
one
Matt
of those.
Matt doesn't really have any, like.
Yeah, Matt, do you shave?
Yeah, of course he does.
He shaves.
Part, but like, look at your face morning. Compared to his.
Well, I don't shave that often.
Yeah, but he just, there's no stubble on his
Yeah,
cheeks.
Some people, I think, are a little bit more like, they're
just not going to, like, yeah.
My sense is that Hayes could not grow like a beard that would he would feel comfortable with, if that's what you're saying.
Right.
But
it would be like an Asian kind of beard.
I think so. But mm-hmm. I don't want to talk out of turn. I don't really know. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't shave. Maybe he just.
Next time you're in the men's room with him, see if he has pubes.
Well, that's what everybody does after a show anyways.
I know. You go in.
So if I do the last segment of the night, that happens inevitably.
Yeah.
But obviously if I'm doing an earlier segment in the show, then I go.
Right.
I leave before that happens.
Now, don't you think that Rachel has been very instrumental in this follow the money sort of trajectory?
I mean, I don't watch a lot of her show. I mean, I don't watch a lot of any of those shows, to be honest with you. But
right. But
I know that she's been doing a lot of the Russia stuff. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I don't know to what extent that they've done sort of reporting that has broken stuff, but she's maintained a narrative, and you know,
Right. Certainly
I think like all the New York Times reporters go on there, and they seem to go on there first, and her numbers are astronomical.
Right.
Her numbers, I think, are the highest that MSNBC has ever had, period, end of story.
No way.
I'm pretty sure.
Because I don't miss that show. Like when I go out and then I come home, I tape it. I watch it every night.
And her show runs twice, right? I mean, they used to run Hayes's twice,
yeah.
But now the Brian Williams is there, so I don't know. But
yeah, they run it at midnight.
What's stunning is that my understanding is that Rachel's got the highest rated cable news show, then O'Donnell, who apparently it's going to take a little bit more than unprecedented ratings on our network to keep your job. which seems to me to be absurd. I mean, regardless of what you think about his show, you know, we're all led to believe that there's just these mechanics. And the fact is that, look, my understanding is that Comcast and Verizon have been in talks a little bit. There is a very strong, I think, incentive for corporations like this to be on the good side of an administration so that they get the FCC votes that they want, that they get the Federal Trade Commission, that they may get antitrust rulings. And so we're going to see this. I mean, let me put it this way. I think like Hayes and Rachel and O'Donnell are on that are on that network because they have had record-setting numbers. Period. Like if it was short of that, I have a feeling it would be a completely different network by now.
You think it would be more right wing?
Oh yeah.
Ridiculous. How many more right wing fucking networks do we need?
Apparently, at least one or two.
Great.
More.
Mm-hmm. Ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. So you got to get your son to start watching this show. Judy, where can people see you tonight at the, what is it, the draft?
At the Arlington Draft House.
What is that? Is that like a beer place?
It's an old movie theater, and it's great, and they do comedy and they show movies and they have events there. It's great.
Who opens for you?
I don't know who's opening for me tonight.
That's the way it goes, folks. That's the way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know because, you know, no one wants to follow me. Hey now.
I feel like we've calmed you down. I feel like you're in a much better like sort of mental state right now than
I've had. I've had 2 hours sleep and you know, I know I'm going to go night-night now for a little while.
All right.
I have really tried to not get angry. We didn't even talk about Mika and Joe.
What happened? They got married.
No, they didn't get married yet.
Oh, they didn't?
No, but duh.
What? They've been fooling around?
Oh my God! I mean, the way she looks at him—they're
engaged.
I think that's long-standing.
Don't you think? After they get married, it's not going to be.
Oh yeah, no, I think it's. I think once they get married, it's over.
I think he's emotionally abusive on air, so I can only imagine what kind of an asshole he is off air.
Well, it could be sort of the characters they play off on air. I don't know. I have no.
Well, why would you want to portray yourself as terrible on air and then be awesome off air?
Money.
Because
I mean, Joe.
No, but they. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I
heard they have makeup sex all the time.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I want to hear that.
Come on, there's too much going
on. Sorry,
it's too hard for everybody in the office.
But now they're anti Trump when they were like got him elected, basically.
Well, I don't think they got him elected, but they certainly helped.
I'm exaggerating.
I know. I agree with you. I mean, I think we've talked about how like they're all of a sudden. I think his whole thing is to be sort of a contrarian. So he just sort of like there's a certain like pivot that he makes on based on where everybody else is going. But all right. Well, I'm sure we'll have more to talk about with Mika and Joe going forward.
Yeah, I can't wait. All right. Listen, I'm going to go to sleep.
Take a nap. Thank you so much.
I really am attracted to Kim Jong-un, and I find him to be very, very hot and sexy.
I mean, that's fine. You do what you want.
Okay.
First Mika and Joe, and now this.
What is it?
Not enough.
And now
what was that movie?
President?
What was that comedy movie with like the guy? I can't remember anybody's name.
I know
the comedy one about them going to North Korea.
Right. I never watched it.
Seth Rogen and Franco.
Yeah, Franco.
Oh, Rob Schneider.
Are you gonna watch that movie now and sort of put yourself to bed?
I'm gonna get out my vibrator and just watch. you know, those those North Korean soldiers walking, you know, the way they walk. Like,
I know.
Don't they walk? Yeah. It's just, it's amazing.
And the tanks.
What is that? What is that?
It's,
oh, and wait, here's my other theory.
Discipline, yeah.
Here's my other theory. My other theory is that, you know how Trump was saying, you know, oh, I'd be honored to meet Kim Jong-un, you know? You know, he's 26. His father left him with all this, and he has a lot of responsibility. Because that's, he thinks he, you know, he's like him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Indeed.
You know, fucking asshole. Can you fucking, how is he still president? Like, how is he still president? How has he not gotten impeached or fired? Or how is he still there?
It's a really complex story, Judy. There's a lot of institutional failures, the media, the press. It all started with me being the product of incest myself.
I actually do wonder that.
I just don't know.
There's something really, really off about him.
Beyond.
Beyond.
And
off.
anyone who's like, you know, we gave the information to the president, and the president is going to be carefully. No, he's not going to be carefully doing anything. Okay? Like, I hate when they talk about him like he's a real person.
Well, the worst part is when you start to hear, we could trust McMaster's and Mattis. They're in charge now.
Right.
Wonderful. The generals. All right, Judy, we got to go.
All right.
Take a nap.
I love you.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay.
I hope so. So long.
Bye. Judy Gold, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will take your phone calls. We will play some sound clips. Folks, a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you extra material every day. Every day.
Should we do this Jimmy Reefer Cake song as a lead into the fun half?
Yes, let's do that. What is the Jimmy Reefer Cake song?
DNC Hypocrites.
DNC Hypocrites. Oh, is this based on the lawsuit?
Finally some coverage on the Majority Report.
All right, folks. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade, coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, if you buy your stuff from Amazon or Jet.com, check out MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the link, purchase your stuff. You will notice no difference. We get a kickback. See you in a bit.
The DNC lawsuit is exciting to me because they screwed over Bernie. And everyone who donated money got a damn good reason to be pissed off at these DNC hypocrites. Oh, when it comes to the voting booth, we need the truth. We see the proof. The DNC charter was violated, and now they stand so devastated. You DNC hypocrites, oh yeah. Conspiracy, they shout. Don't look over here. The DNC was never meant to be fair. The charter was always a lie, don't you see? A lesson in political hypocrisy. You DNC hypocrites. Joseph Ballin, you're the man, buddy.
There we go. Oh, yeah, let's... Yeah, go ahead, play the La Poupée, I guess. The DNC hypocrites. A little bit of Adam Sandler-y in there, isn't it? Always a little bit. All right, that's Jimmy Reefcake. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.